Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being until we ask for callers, because we have with us tonight Craig Wynn, his book, Muhammad, Prophet of Doom, Islam's Terrorist Dogma in Muhammad's Own Words. This is a fascinating book. It's almost 1,000 pages, 980-some pages, and it is, as far as I'm concerned, the definitive work on the Muhammadan religion. Now, it's based not only on the Quran, but it's based upon the Sirah and the Hadith and other Islamic writings that were written shortly after Muhammad lived, and without which we really wouldn't know much about Muhammad or the religion that he advocated. Recently, I think many Americans were extremely distraught when they saw what happened at Fallujah, when there were four Americans who were burned to death, and then their bodies were mutilated and they were hung on a bridge. But you must understand that this would be perfectly acceptable to Muhammad and those people who embrace the true Islamic faith that Muhammad advocated. And so without further ado, I'm going to let you talk to somebody who, or listen to somebody who knows a lot more about this than I do, and that's Craig Wynn. Craig, thanks so much for being with us again.
Dr. Stan, it's always my pleasure. You've come to not only understand Islam and also to have the courage to speak out against it so that we can hopefully save Muslims from it and us from the terror it inspires.
All right, fine. Well, let's get into the background. Now, you first got started in this really when you went over to the Palestinian area and interviewed some of the terrorists there who were very close to Arafat. Would you like to tell that story just as a background?
Sure. Right after 9/11, I decided that somebody need to find to understand why it was that people would fly planes into buildings shouting Allahu Akbar, which means Allah is greatest, and why people would celebrate around the world, which is what they did in the Islamic world, the death and mutilation of the 3,000 people at 9/11. And so I decided I would go do this. And I flew off to Israel. There, after 10 days of meeting with the Mossad and the Shin Bet, that's the FBI and the CIA of Israel, Knesset members, as well as Palestine Authority ministers, I was able to broker a meeting with a member of 417, which is Yasser Arafat's secret service. And from that meeting, I ultimately arranged a series of meetings with the terrorists themselves. Al-Qaeda, which at the time was not even known to be in Israel. Now it's fairly common knowledge that Al-Qaeda is in Israel. Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, Fatah, and Oscar Martyrs Brigade. The first group of terrorists that I met with was a captain and two lieutenants. They were, as you have said, direct reports to Yasser Arafat. Fatah is Yasser Arafat's personal political party. It's very much like the Ba'ath Party in Iraq. It's a kind of a mix between fascist and socialist. These three men were very much full of themselves. They had just come off the previous evening murdering 11 Jewish women and children. And they were so proud because they said that we were not terrorists. We did not do it with suicide bombs strapped to our bodies. We instead blew off the axle to the bus. And as the women and children fled to the bus, at point-blank range, they blew off their heads. They did so, by the way, with American rifles and American ammunition. At Oslo.
Now, hadn't they actually been trained by our own forces or by our own CIA?
They were trained by the CIA in Virginia, the two lieutenants, and they described where they were trained, and later in a debriefing, the CIA confirmed that in fact, was the case. The reason they had American weapons and American ammunition is Yasser Arafat convinced Bill Clinton, and understand that Yasser Arafat and Bill Clinton were very close. Yasser Arafat was the most frequent overnight guest at the White House during his administration, that he needed weapons and training to equip a police force that could be used to prevent terrorism. Instead, those guns and the trainings and ammunition was used to by terrorists to kill Jews.
But, of course, Arafat is a lifelong terrorist. I mean, this is where he got his start. He has been associated with all sorts of terrorist activities in the past. I'm not sure why Bill Clinton would think that a tiger would change its spots and that you could give him weapons that would be used for peaceful purposes.
That's right. Yasser Arafat is actually an Egyptian. He was recruited originally by Nasser, who was the communist who ruled Egypt some time ago. He was trained in the Soviet Union by the KGB. The original covenant for the PLO was written in Egypt. Its stated goal is to destroy Israel, to kill all Jews. And this is the platform that Yasser Arafat went into Israel to perpetrate. His actual first act of terror, though, was not against Jews, it was against Americans. Sirhan, the murderer of Robert Kennedy, was a Palestinian. And so Yasser Arafat arranged a terrorist raid against American diplomats in Africa, held them captive, tried to ransom them for Sirhan's release. America said no, and he murdered them. And from there, he became a worldwide terrorist, recognized terrorist. His organization, as a matter of fact, is really responsible for originally creating the unrest in Lebanon that ultimately led to the civil war there. And he's probably the most successful terrorist on the planet today.
And yet he has the complete support of our government. We finance him. We've given him probably hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars. We equip and train the terrorists who work for him.
Right, he's a billionaire. That's what's really interesting. In fact, the entire nature of the Islamic world is the same. The thugs who run the Islamic world are all on the take. They all, even the average Muslim, knows that they can't trust any of their leaders. It's called skimming in the in that world. Yasser Arafat has skimmed over $1 billion from international organizations providing aid that has never been given to his people. It's just the nature of Islam. It's such a destructive and deceitful dogma. The people in power use it for their own personal benefit.
And if anybody doubts that, there was a beautiful expose of this on 60 Minutes about 2 months or so ago, and I'm sure you could get the script of that, but they had actually tracked down, I'm sure you're right, well over $1 billion for Yasser Arafat, much of that coming from poor people in the United States sent to a very rich terrorist in Palestine. So let's pick up the story from there. Now, you of course, began to meet with these people. You met the captain and the two lieutenants who just finished killing 11 Israeli women using American weapons and American ammunition. And they were really very proud of what they'd done. They didn't think there was anything wrong with it. After all, they were soldiers, and their job was to kill the enemy, even if they were non-combatants. So go ahead.
In matter of fact, the captain said that that he had gone on that mission at the direct order of Yasser Arafat, and that if Arafat ordered him to kill tomorrow, he would. He said, "I'm an army man. This is my job." And by the way, they were not anti-American. They said, "If it wasn't for America, we would not exist. You fund us, so we're friends with America, and we have many many supporters in America." These were actually rational men. Now, it's hard to believe you can say a person can be rational and murder 11 women and children, but you could have an intelligent conversation with them. As they were leaving, they said, "We know who you're meeting with next, and you need to know that they are genuinely crazy, and that the people you're going to meet with next," which was Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Islamic Jihad, they said, "they are fundamentalist Muslims, they are extremely well-financed, they are growing very rapidly. Within a year's time, they will be the majority of Muslims here in the Palestinian areas, and America has no idea as to why they are growing, or once they are in control, how to stop them. And so these men called those men crazy and out of control, and they were. When I met with these members of Al-Qaeda, and the member of the senior representative of Al-Qaeda that I met with had been a direct report to Osama bin Laden back when Osama bin Laden was in the Sudan, which is really where he came into his own as a terrorist thug. And these men were completely indoctrinated. They were killing machines for Islam. Their attitude towards life, their attitude towards Jews, Christians, Americans, was precisely as the Quran presents it, and therefore these men were stunningly frightening. It was literally like having a conversation with the devil.
And, of course, they see no value to life. Now, they're quite willing to die in battle. That's the only way they can be really certain of getting into a paradise. And so many of the fundamentalists of Muslims are have this intense fear of hell, and they're never sure they're going to get there, unless, of course, they die in battle fighting for Allah. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. Matter of fact, what most people don't know is that of the Quran's 114 surahs, there is one rant that is by far the most dominant in the book, and that is the rant about punishment, hell, and demons. It's replayed over 1,000 times in the Quran. That is its fixation is on sadistic behavior. It shows Allah involved in hell. It never shows him in paradise. He's always in hell, and he is always performing very sadistic tortures on Christians and Jews and what he calls hypocrites, which are peaceful Muslims. And each of these tortures is detailed in terms of Allah rotates men on a spit. When he burns off their skin, he gives them a new skin. He pours boiling water down their throats. He makes them wear garments of molten pitch. Makes them eat thorns and refuge. It is a really a perverse presentation of the behavior of a deity, and it's repeated so often that it is literally the fear of hell and the fear of this sadistic spirit that causes Muslims to do anything to avoid it. Now, as you know, on the flip side, Islam is the antithesis of Christianity. In Christianity, God came into our world in the form of a man, sacrificing himself on a cross so that we might live eternally with him. In Islam, it's just the opposite. Allah requires men to sacrifice their lives, killing for him, if they wish to go to his paradise. And rather than paradise being with him, paradise in Islam is burning in lust. It is as it's depicted in the Quran, it's multiple virgins and rivers that flow with wine. So in every aspect, this is the opposite of what we would consider to be rational religion or even rational values.
Well, the great tragedy is that this movement is growing, and we see what's happening over in Iraq today as more and more young Muslims from various countries throughout the Islamic world are traveling to Iraq to fight the Crusaders, because this is the way they look upon us. We are the Crusaders. We are returning there after, you know, 1,000 years to take their land away from them. And whether we understand this or not, they understand it, and they're quite irrational. They're quite willing to give their lives in this battle to kill Americans, even if they lose 10-1. If they can kill an American, that, of course, is the one thing they hope to do.
Understand, they don't care if they lose a 1,000,000-1, because they believe that each of those million will end up in Allah's brothel. So dying is the only guaranteed admittance into Islamic paradise, and therefore dying killing infidels is the goal, as opposed to normal warfare. You know, you would try to prevail and with a minimum loss of life in Islam, the more that die, the merrier.
Well, it said that in the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia, they lost 1,000, we lost 18.
Right.
But they felt it was a triumph because America then was forced to leave, and they were triumphant by driving America out of the Holy Land of Islam.
Right.
So the average American cannot understand this mentality unless they understand the foundations that you've laid out so beautifully in your book, The Prophet of Doom. So
that's true, and that's one of the biggest problems we have as Americans, and this is the problem America has had long before our principal enemy became Islam. We have never understood our enemy. And when you don't understand your enemy, it becomes very difficult for you to create a successful strategy against them. Like, we look at Iraq as Americans, and we think they want the same thing we do. We think they want a free enterprise system, and that they want an open educational system, and that they want democracy and these kinds of things. They don't want those things. Islam is the antithesis of Judeo-Christianity. Our value system in America, even if you're an atheist, you need to know that the value system in America is based on the Judeo-Christian scriptures, as is our legal system. Islam is the antithesis of these things. You know, there's a Quran surah dedicated to stealing, saying that stealing is lawful and good. The Quran endorses mass murder. Its prophet was a mass murderer. It endorses bearing false witness. In fact, it orders Muslims to deceive non-Muslims. Every aspect of the Ten Commandments are spit upon by Muhammad and Islam, and therefore we can't apply our values, our way of thinking, to them.
Unfortunately, the average American doesn't understand that they have a different set of values than we do. In fact, there's a wonderful book by Samuel Huntington called The Clash of Civilizations, written in 1996. But he's professor of history at Harvard. He's a brilliant man. And he says, you know, if you want to get into a war, why, the thing you do is try to go into an Islamic nation and force them to adopt your ways. They don't want to force our ways.
No.
And then if you really want to get into a war, you attack the people there, because there is this kin relationship, this kin citizenship, and every Muslim in the world, or many of the Muslims from throughout the world, are going to come to fight you because they are all brothers. They have a common culture, a common religion, a common God, that would be Allah. And if you want to really get a world war going, why, you would get a war going with an Islamic nation. And that's exactly what we're doing. And you wonder how our leaders could be so foolish unintentionally.
Well, I don't think they're unintentionally foolish. I just think that their behavior serves their own political interests, and they are willfully ignorant of the nature of the enemy that we're fighting. And that's tragic, because we have lost 650 American lives in a war that we have no possibility of leaving Iraq better than we found it. It's very much like Vietnam in that regard. When you're dealing with people who will not honor any kind of covenant or contract or treaty or constitution that we create on their behalf, and will denounce it the moment we leave, we're going to end up with a Shiite theocracy as the moment that we leave Iraq, and unfortunately that'll mean that 1,000 Americans will have died for nothing.
And of course, it's not just 1,000 Americans, but right now, according to Colonel Hackworth, we've got about 15,000 casualties. We never talk about those casualties, kids with their legs blown off, their hands blown off, blinded, or perhaps just some sort of a permanent illness that will be with them the rest of their lives.
It's actually probably several times that.
We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Craig Wynn, talking about Prophet of Doom. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Craig Wynn, talking about his new book, and really it's a book that every one of our listeners out there needs to get. I believe it's the best book we have, letting you understand what we're really up against and the Pandora's box has been opened, the genie's out of the bottle, and there's no way we're going to be able to put it back again, short of divine intervention. So let's talk a little bit more. You, of course, went into Palestine. You had met the people from the bodyguards, this special army of Arafat. And then you meet the Al-Qaeda, and you meet the Hamas and the Hezbollah. And what is your impression as you talk to these people?
That they were insane. That they had lost all ability to think rationally. I have subsequently found out that is universal within Islam. All good Muslims have been brainwashed to the point that they are no longer able to think rationally. Now, that sounds like a harsh statement, but if you want to see evidence of that, go to prophetofdoom.net, which is the website that I've created dedicated to this book and to forums related to Prophet of Doom. There are now probably 200 exchanges with Muslims on the site, and read their words and then read their responses to my reply, and you'll see what I'm trying to say, which is that they've lost the ability to reason, and they have no concept whatsoever of how to deal with evidence. The primary purpose of me going over there was I wanted to ask them why they were killing us. And then based upon understanding their motivation for killing us, I thought that it would be possible then to devise a strategy to prevent more killings. So when I asked them why they were killing us, they said that their God, Allah, had ordered them to wipe the infidels out to the last, and that their prophet had ordered them to kill every Jew. And as we talked about their scriptures and them quoting the Quran and the Hadith, it became obvious to me that one of two things had to be true. Either they were misquoting their scripture, pulling verses out of context, and emphasizing the violent verses over the negative verses. In other words, they had corrupted their religion, which is all you hear on the radio and the television, or they were quoting them correctly, they were quoting them in context, and that they were quoting the majority message of the Hadith and Quran. Those are the only two choices. If the second choice is true, it was Islam that had corrupted them as opposed to the other way around. And so, as you know, I came back from that meeting, which was a miracle in itself, because almost the whole meeting there's a gun or multiple guns pointed at my head, them calling me CIA, and them talking about how they're looking forward to killing me. And so it is miracle that I was able to come back and even tell the story. I spent the next 10,000 hours of my life studying the Islamic scriptures. What I found is that there's only four books written about Muhammad that are considered authentic. Only one that was written within 200 years of his death. That's called the Sirah. And because we've lost the original Sirah, most of it is retained in a book called the Takrith, which is the history. Sirah means biography, by Tabati. So Ishaq's Sirah, Tabati's Takrith, or history, and then two topical collections of the sayings of Muhammad, one by Bukhari, one by Muslim.
Hold that thought right there.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Craig Wynn, and we're talking about what happened after he, of course, had come back from talking to people from Hamas and from Hezbollah and from Al-Qaeda and other radical Islamic groups, or maybe Islamic groups, but maybe we shouldn't call them as radical, because they certainly are very true to the writings of the Quran and the teachings of Muhammad. Why he spent 10,000 hours researching this and put it together in a book called Prophet of Doom. There's one thing I wanted to get to before we got away from your trip into Palestine, and that was the financing. You mentioned that certainly the first people you ran into were quite aware of the fact that they had been financed by the American CIA. They'd been trained by the CIA. But as far as Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, where were they getting their funding?
Principally Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia awards the families of a suicide bomber $1 million each. And their next largest source of funds was Iran, followed by Iraq and Egypt and Syria. The Muslims, from the very inception, and we'll get to this in a moment, have always been mercenaries. As a matter of fact, the members of Fatah, Oscar Martyr's Brigade, which were the first terrorists that I met with, explained that the sole motivation for the rapid growth of the jihadist, fundamentalist Islamic movement within the Palestinian people was money. That there was no economy, and therefore the people with money could force their will on others. And they explained that representatives of the Fahd family in Saudi Arabia have their representatives in each of the neighborhoods throughout the Palestinian-controlled areas, and they give money, buckets full of money, to those families who support their view of Islam, which is the fundamentalist view of Islam that we call Wahhabism, where all men must be jihadists, where all Jews must be killed, while where all Christians have to be killed. It's the world conquest fundamental Islam. And so, literally, they're bribed. And they're bribed primarily by the countries that America's politicians would tell you are our friends.
And that is one of the great tragedies. The president is doing everything he can to protect the people who financed the Al-Qaeda terrorists who came to America, who continue financing the terrorist activities in Palestine. And I suspect that, at least indirectly, they may be helping to finance some of what's going on in Iraq today, although you'll never hear that discussed. But we certainly know that they financed Al-Qaeda. One of the princes there, his wife had given money to two of the people who were on the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center immediately after the bombing of our buildings, the blowing up of our buildings. The FBI escorted the members of bin Laden's family, about 30 members of the family, out of this country. They were allowed to get out without being questioned or investigated. And then there are families of the people who were killed who are brought suit against Saudi Arabia for financing the terrorists, and
the Bush administration threw it out.
Right, and everything is being done to prevent that lawsuit from going through. So
let me read something to you that is chilling.
All right,
the highest ranking Islamic cleric in the world is a Sunni a sheikh. He is the hand picked head of the Sunni group of Muslims in Saudi Arabia. He is the principal sheikh for the Fahd warlords that run Saudi Arabia. I'm going to read what he said as he was involved in a telethon that raised $109 million to reward the families of Palestinian suicide bombers. His name is Barak. He said, "I am against America. She is the root of all evils and wickedness on earth. Muslims, do not take Jews and Christians as allies. Muslim brothers, do not have any mercy or compassion on them, their blood, their money, or their flesh. Their women are yours to take legitimately. Allah made them yours. Why don't you enslave their women? Why don't you wage jihad? Why don't you pillage them?" That's the highest ranking Sunni cleric in the world. He is funded entirely by the Fahd family of terrorists that we in America like so much, we invite them to the president's ranch.
Now, of course, as the president has said, Islam is a religion of peace. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Craig Wynn. Please hold your calls because we want to get into his book, The Prophet of Doom. You're going to find this fascinating. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and guest this evening, Craig Wynn, his book, The Prophet of Doom, and it's based upon the writings. What are all the various writings besides the Quran that go into your book?
There are five books that comprise Islam. The first of those is the Sirah. The Sirah is the most revealing book in Islam. To not have the Sirah would be to be just like being a Christian without the Gospels. The Gospels present the context of Christ's ministry and Christ's words. Well, the Quran does not present any context whatsoever, and it allegedly is only Allah's words. So the only way to know anything about Islam's lone prophet is through the Sirah, written by Ibn Ishaq 120 years after Muhammad's death. It's the only account of Muhammad's life and words within two centuries of his death. The next is the history of Al-Tabari. Al-Tabari was the first Islamic scholar. He wrote the first commentary on the Quran. It's the most respected commentary on the Quran. But he also wrote the most comprehensive history of Islam. A history like the Sirah, which is a biography that is completely comprised of what Muslims call hadith, which are traditions or oral reports that have the veracity of scripture from their point of view. They are, from their vantage point, inspired actions, example, and words of Muhammad, their lone prophet. And then there's two collections of hadith that were organized by subject as opposed to set in a chronology or timeline, and they are by Bukhari and Muslim. Now, the reason these are so important is that the Quran itself is quite easily the worst book ever written. The Quran has no chronology. Now, can you imagine reading a book that has no chronology whatsoever? It's like you were to take groups of three or four verses, throw them up into a tornado, and wherever they fell down upon the sand is how you would pick them up and put them together. Not only doesn't have it any chronology, it has no context. No context means you don't know who is talking to whom or why. There'll be a reference to a battle, but the battle won't be named. There'll be a reference to a place, the place won't be named. There'll be a conversation with people, the people won't be named. And so it has no context or no chronology, and therefore, for it to make any sense at all, it has to have the context and chronology of the Sirah and Takrith by Tabari provide. Moreover, all of Islam's pillars come out of the hadith collections.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Craig. Okay, Dr. Stan, Craig Wynn is just talking about the background to his book. It's not only the Quran, but as he says, the Quran is probably the worst book ever written because it really has no sequence to it at all. So you have to have the Sirah, and you have to have Al-Tabari's history, and the Hadith, at least three other books to begin to put the Quran into any sort of an understandable document. Otherwise, it's nothing but confusion. So pick up the story from there.
Sure. There's lots of reasons that I say the Quran is the worst book ever written. One is that it has no context. The other is that it has no chronology. It's probably the only book ever written that has neither context or chronology. It isn't even organized by subject. But on top of that, the Quran's message has inspired more violence than any book ever written. So it has a demented, sadistic message. As a matter of fact, it is a declaration of war on all humankind. And I'll read some lines out of the Quran in a moment so you'll have an understanding as to how lethal the Quran is. In addition to that, the Quran is significantly plagiarized. The plagiarism, though, isn't where most people think it is, from the Bible, because he ripped off Abraham and Moses, a character he calls Esau that is supposed to be Jesus, and Noah and Lot and Adam. The fact is that what he plagiarized from is the Talmud, and there are literally word-for-word renditions of Jewish folklore, uninspired writings of rabbis from the Talmud in the Quran, which is extraordinarily embarrassing for Islam. It destroys its entire credibility. In addition to all of that, according to the foremost scholars on the oldest Qurans in existence. Jerd Prun would be the lead of them, studying the oldest Quran fragments. He says, and I quote, that one out of every five verses of the Quran is indistinguishable in any language, incomprehensible in any language. And that is a direct result of missing words and made up words, so that the reason Muslims don't want it translated out of religious Arabic is because it makes no sense in religious Arabic, much less in any other language. On top of all of that, the book is helplessly repetitive. The same story is told of Lot, for example, 15 times. We hear the story of Noah 12 different times. We hear the story of the Exodus 25 different times. And so almost any way you look at the book, whether it's from its nasty nature, its emphasis on sadistic tortures, the fact that it inspires terror in war, the fact that it is plagiarized, that's the only good parts are actually plagiarized from the Jewish Talmud, the fact that it is written in an incomprehensible fashion, the fact that it has no context and no chronology, any way you look at it, it is arguably the worst book ever written.
Well, now, Kirsten, an awful lot of people who read this book and who, of course, have given their whole lives to it...
They don't actually read it.
They don't actually read it?
No, they recite it. One of the great misnomers about the Quran and religious Arabic. Religious Arabic is such a dated language. It's very much like if you spoke Italian, reciting something in Latin. Unless you had dedicated 20 years of your life to do nothing but learn Latin, even if you could recite it in Latin, chances are you couldn't even think in Latin, which means you're doing the translation in your head anyway. But the vast majority of Muslims who can speak Arabic, and it's only about 3% of the world's population that can speak Arabic, that only a tiny fraction of them, maybe 1 in 100, can read Arabic, but they're reading MSA, Modern Standard Arabic. It's maybe 1 in 10,000 of them that can read the religious Arabic, this dated language like Latin, a dead language really, that the Quran is written in, which means that it's 1 in several hundred thousand people that can actually read the Quran in its original language, and even that doesn't do them any good because it's senseless in that language. So very few people understand the Quran. That's the reason why you have to have so many different translations of it, because everyone is really guessing as to what Allah was trying to say.
And of course, they will criticize anybody who discusses it by saying, well, you can't read it in Arabic, so you can't really understand it.
And they can't read it in Arabic either. That the Quran is always translated out of religious Arabic into common Arabic or MSA. When they're trying to make any sense of it. And trust me, one of the things that the Islamic world does not want is they don't want even their own people to understand the Quran. As a matter of fact, one of the really interesting things about the Quran, and it says this in the fifth surah, in fact, it's within the last six surahs verses revealed by Muhammad, and it says that there once was a group of people who questioned the Quran, and because of them questioning the Quran, they lost their faith. Muhammad said that the thing Allah hates most is questions. This dogma is so obviously false, so obviously demonic, that the last thing Muslims want is for their own to understand the Quran, much less to understand their prophet, because as disgusting as the Quran is, the Islamic hadith is far more revolting.
Now, when you have gotten in your debates, and I know you've done a number of debates with the Muslims, do they throw this at you? Well, you're not reading it the original language?
They used to, until they recognized that if they want to go down that track, I will turn that argument against them. For example, having studied the language of Arabic, I know that written Arabic was developed after the Quran was allegedly revealed. That makes the Quran a lie. Religious Arabic was developed by the Syrian Christians. It was a derivative of a language called Syriac, and it was a language specifically designed by Syrian Christians. It did not make its way into written form into Central Arabia until about 50 to 75 years after the Quran was allegedly revealed. Every single important religious term in the Quran is not Arabic. It's Syriac. And the ones that aren't Syriac are Hebrew. So the Quran itself is not written in Arabic as it claims to be. So it's not a subject that that Muslim clerics have been successful in trying to say you can't understand it. Because the next thing I'll say is that you know, not only do I have 12 translations of the Quran, and use all 12 of them, you can't tell me that that Arabic is the only language in human history that can't be translated into a contemporary language. And are you trying to say that God's final and most important revelation to mankind has to stay a prisoner in a language that 1 in 300,000 people can read?
Well, let's get on to what you really found as you begin to analyze this. And, of course, we're told that Islam, at least the Muslim religion, is a religion of peace. But as you've gone into this, you actually found that it's really a religion of violence and advocating torture and slavery. And why don't you give us a little of the history of Muhammad and how he came to write and how he had this divine inspiration that led him, at least a supposed divine inspiration, to write the Quran?
Sure. Maybe just to give you a quick overview of the structure of Prophet of Doom, so listeners will know what we're talking about here and what they would find if they want to come to understand this dogma that has declared war on us. Tabati's history presents Muhammad's sayings from Islamic creation right through his ripoff and bastardization of the Hebrew prophets through pre-Muhammad life in Mecca, through the revelation of the first 91 surahs of the Quran, the Meccan surahs, through the beginning of the Islamic era, which is the terrorist reign of Islam, and then the acts of his disciples. I use that as the timeline. The sirah provides more kind of graphic detail, being a biography of Muhammad, throughout this period of time. And with those tools, I was therefore able to reorder the Quran surahs in the order they were revealed, as opposed to the order they are jumbled together now, and I was able to set them in the context of Muhammad's life so that when Muhammad, when you see a surah like the 33rd surah that endorses incest, you would know what was going on in Muhammad's life as to why he needed an endorsement for incest. He saw his son's wife naked and he lusted for her, and you can understand that. You'll see why when Muhammad there's a surah that says that a prophet should not take a captive, in other words, should not engage in the slave trade until he is slaughtered first. And when you can put that in the context of Muhammad's life, you know specifically what he's talking about.
He was also a pedophile, wasn't he? And really, really very perverted in so many of his activities?
He was a sexual pervert of the most disgusting, in all ways. Let's talk about all of the forms of sexual perversion, because the Islamic Hadith and the Quran confirmed that he was guilty of all of these things, any one of them would preclude him from being a prophet. So it is the principal purpose of Prophet of Doom to reveal what the Islamic scriptures say about Muhammad, because I don't think there is a single rational person living in the free world that wants to get their spiritual guidance from a sexual pervert. So let's discuss what Muhammad was. First, he was a pedophile. When he was 50 years old, he married his best friend's six-year-old daughter. Now, there have been, in the most desperate circumstances, civilizations where 12-year-olds have married 12-year-olds. There has never been a society in the history of mankind where it was considered appropriate for a six-year-old to marry. Nor has there been any society where it was appropriate for a 50-year-old to have sex with a six-year-old. That is textbook pedophilia. It is child abuse. And it's not just one case where Muhammad was involved in this. And by the way, with Aisha, which is the principal and most well-known act of pedophilia, it's documented throughout the Islamic scriptures. But Muhammad was given countless child sex slaves. In fact, his only son was born of one of those, of a Copt, a Christian from Egypt, who was given to him as a child sex slave. So he had many, many, many acts of pedophilia. And he said that Allah ordered him to have sex with these children. Okay, so you go from pedophilia to rape. There are four documented presentations where there are two or more of the five principal sources that give us excruciating detail of rapes that Muhammad personally did, where he would go into a village, his militants would kill the men, he would make the women watch his militants decapitate their sons, their husbands, and their fathers, and then he would get first dibs. He always picked the prettiest woman. He would then play a game of lots so that his militants would get the next dibs on the women, and they raped them. They raped them. Muhammad is a multiple offender rapist, according to his scriptures. Then you have incest. There's a Quran surah that is dedicated to legitimizing Muhammad's incest when he saw Zainab, his adopted son's wife. He desired her, and so there's a surah where Allah is saying incest is no big deal. It's approved for you, Muhammad. You can have whomever you desire. Their wives, their daughters, they belong to you. You have a claim on them. There is no shame in this. And then you go to womanizing. There are Quran surahs that are dedicated to telling Muhammad that if his wives don't please him, that they aren't pleasing Allah, that to please Muhammad sexually is to please Allah, and that if they don't please him, that Allah will cause all of them to go away and will replace them with a whole new set of virgins. One of the hadiths is interesting. There's two that are really particularly painful that talk about how Muhammad went into to Mecca during the conquest of Mecca. He killed this woman's husband and her father, and then Muhammad brought her into his harem to have sex with her. And the other wives are saying, "Don't you feel disgusted? This man killed all the men in your family, and now you're going to have sex with him?" A little girl ran up to Muhammad in one of these hadiths and said, I am a little girl, but I am offering myself to you. Do you want me?" And he says, "Of course I want you." And so she ran home to get her things from mommy and daddy, and in the Islamic hadith says, "What are you doing? Muhammad is a womanizer. Run away from him." This man was easily the most sadistic sexual pervert that we probably know of in all of recorded history, and certainly the most perverted person morally that ever claimed to be a religious prophet.
But then why is it that the Muslim people follow him? Are they unaware of what we're talking about, or is it simply they're simply blindly following him? Because if they don't, they'll be killed. After all, if you are a Muslim and you leave the faith, the Muslim faith to become a Christian, why they will kill you.
The fourth surah says that if any Muslim rejects Islam, kill him. Hunt him down and find him wherever they might be. By the way, it says the same thing of a peaceful Muslim. That says that if any Muslim fails to leave their home to fight jihad in Allah's cause, that they cease to be a Muslim, they become a hypocrite. Allah then orders the jihadist Muslims to kill them, and Muhammad says, or Allah says, that I will torture them personally in the hottest places of my hell.
So there is something much more here. This is really incredible. Now, what about this background of where Muhammad thinks that he is demonically possessed? And this certainly, I think, is one of the most significant things you talk about, that Muhammad himself believed he was demonically possessed.
That's correct. You know, you're not going to have the kind of perversion we've just talked about with rape and incest and pedophilia and womanizing and adultery and all these kinds of things unless there's something seriously wrong with a person. And what was seriously wrong with Muhammad is he was demon-possessed. Let's go through some of the evidences we have of that. The first is that the first revelation to Muhammad is documented throughout the Islamic scriptures in the Hadith collections. And every one of the presentations has the same information. It says that Muhammad was out doing the pagan practices of Ramadan fasting, which it's important for your listeners to know, Dr. Stan, that every Islamic ritual was actually conceived and practiced by Muhammad's forefathers as a pagan rite. He didn't create anything in Islam. He just copied a pagan religion and called it Islam. So he was out doing this. He was doing it in a cave. And he says that a spirit came to him and beat him three times to the point of death. Then after the spirit had beat him near the point of death, Muhammad was so frightened, in fact, he even said he was terrorized, that his first response was to run to the top of the mountain and throw himself off and commit suicide. This is his own words now. Then Muhammad said that, unfortunately, he was too big a weasel to do that. He ran home to his wife, who was his employer. She was 60 years old at the time, and said, "Something terrible has happened to me. I fear for my life. I have been possessed." So with the first revelation, which is the first six verses of the 96th surah of the Quran, Muhammad says that it happened in an environment where a spirit beat him up, terrorized him, and he came to the conclusion that he had been demon-possessed. We move on to the central pillar, the fulcrum of Islam, where the religion of Islam ends and the terrorist dogma of Islam begins. It's called the Satanic Verses. It is the derivative, Dr. Stan, of what's called the Quraysh Bargain. Muhammad was a member of the Quraysh tribe in Mecca, which was a tiny little place, 5,000 people. And the Meccans were just disgusted by him. If you read the eyewitness accounts, and I even have a section in the appendix of the book where I take 400 quotes from the eyewitnesses as they are recorded in the Quran and Hadith, they were all saying, you know, Muhammad, you're demon-possessed. You're a charlatan, you're plagiarizing this, you're doing it for your own personal gain, and you're a complete fraud. But he got to be such an irritant in this little town, the chief said, "Listen, Muhammad, we know you're demon-possessed, but there are people who are specifically trained at casting out these demons. We'll pay for the demon to be cast out from you. And in addition to that, we're going to give you the prettiest women in town, sex, we're going to give you lots of money, and we're going to give you a share of power. Sex, power, and money, the big three. But what we want in return is we want you to acknowledge our gods. If you'll do that, Muhammad, we'll give you these three things and everything, you know, we'll go on with our lives." Now, what's interesting is the top Meccan god out of the 360 in the Kaaba, which was a pagan shrine, was Allah. Muhammad's god at the time wasn't Allah, it was Ar-Rahman. Ar-Rahman is named after the Persian devil. And so Muhammad goes to the Kaaba and he says, "All right, Alat, Manat, and Al-Uzza, which were the Allah's daughters, are intermediaries to Allah." And he starts bowing down to this pagan shrine and to these pagan goddesses, all recorded, by the way, in the Quran. and accept the bargain for sex, power, and money.
And, of course, then he was going to worship Allah, who is the pagan god of the moon. Is that right?
That is correct. And so what happens is that the four or five people who had been seduced into Islam came to Muhammad and said, you know, first of all, you didn't cut us in on this deal, and second of all, you told us this was a monotheistic religion, and now you've got at least three gods too many for a monotheistic religion. And so Muhammad reneges on the bargain, and he said, that Quran surah that I revealed, elevating the Manat, Alat, and Al-Uzza to the status of goddesses, was given to me by Satan. And it's called, therefore, the Satanic Verses. The Quran says that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan.
And that, I think, is one of the most devastating of all statements. I'm going to ask you sort of hold there. We're going to have to say goodnight to our listeners up in the Great Northwest, and for those listeners in the Middle West and on the East Coast and there in Indiana. Why, we'll be back right after the break. But this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you would like to know more about our ministry or would like a free copy of our newsletter, the telephone number 1-800-544-8927. Now, the book Prophet of Doom, it's 980-some-odd pages with the index there in the back. It's a fascinating book. If you really want to understand what we're up against in Fallujah, why mutilation and the of the Americans is simply carrying out Muhammad's instructions to be a true, faithful Muslim, you need to get this book. And it's available through Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can go to Craig's website, prophetofdoom.org or com?
.net.
Prophetofdoom.net. All right, prophetofdoom.net if you'd like to get more of his material. But you need to get this information. You need to understand the true nature of the enemy that we face today that is intent upon destruction of our land. So if you would like to get a copy of the Prophet of Doom, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours every day. We start in the morning on the American Freedom Network. There's a link to that. Then we do 2 hours in the afternoon on the Genesis Network, and that's GCNLive.com. That's GCNLive.com. And then in the evening at radioliberty.com, you can, of course, listen to our live program. There are archives there. And we hope that you'll tell others about our programs. You're going to hear things here that you're not going to hear discussed elsewhere. We always like to say that we're bringing you the information that Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw are paid six-figure salaries not to reveal to the American people. I think that probably Rush Limbaugh's up there. Well, he's certainly a six, probably closer to $7 million seven-figure income. But be that as it may, I think you're going to find the material that we present will give you an entirely different slant on what's going on. So again,
he's an eight-figure guy.
Fortunately, we're not tempted with that. We can afford to tell the truth because we're not in this to get the eight-figure salary. Under any circumstances, why? Remember our number is 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty for our. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you'd like to put in a call, we will, of course, take your calls for this hour. But I wanted you to have the background of this book and, of course, Craig's work. During the first hour, during the second hour, we'll be welcome your calls right here at Radio Liberty. And so I so rudely interrupted Craig. He was beginning to tell us about the satanic verses and these verses where Muhammad had said that Allah had told the a demon had told him, or how did he exactly put that?
What he said was that because he had desired a reconciliation with his people, i.e. he wanted to accept their generous bribe of sex, power, and money, that Satan had enticed him to speak on his behalf and to reveal a Quranic surah that had been inspired by Satan himself. And so to make Muhammad feel better, Allah says that, "Don't worry, Muhammad, all of my messengers have spoken on behalf of Satan." Now, so that there's no one is misled here, Allah does not exist. When Muhammad says this was revealed to me, it was inspired in his own little head. All Allah is a the original idol, the chief moon god of Mecca, represented by the black stone that is cemented into the wall of the Kaaba. He's a stone god, a modeled after Sin, which is the moon god of the Chaldeans. And Allah's character is Muhammad's character. In other words, Muhammad made Allah in his own image. There is far more to the demonic nature of Islam. Let me share one other direct demonic reference, and then I want to talk a little bit about the character attributed to Allah in the Quran, because that's real important too. The last sermon that we have in Islam is Muhammad telling his congregation in Medina that a devil was permanently attached to him. So he ends his prophetic career as he began it, saying that he was possessed by a devil. Now, the Quran has a has only one group of people who are, we are told, endorsed it, saying that this is absolutely the word of Allah. Who might you think that the critters might be that in two different surahs go to great lengths talking about Muhammad being a true prophet of Allah and that the Quran is a true revelation from Allah? They're called jinn.
They're called what?
Jinn. J-I-N-N.
All right.
Jinn is the Arabic word. It's actually derived from the Persians for demons, devils. There's even a Quran surah named after these demons or devils. And according to the Quran, at two different times, these demons or devils came to listen to Muhammad recite a surah, and they said, "This is absolutely from our Lord." Who is the Lord of demons?
Satan himself.
Satan himself. Now, the character, I've said that the character attributed to Allah in the Quran is Muhammad's character. It is, because Muhammad was demon-possessed. The character that is that this represents, let me give you some of the characteristics of this dark spirit. First, more than 50 times in the Quran, Allah says that he purposefully deceives and that he leads men astray. That sound like somebody you know?
Well, it sure doesn't sound like the God I worship, that's for certain.
But it does sound like the spirit that is known as the deceiver, does it not?
Right.
Okay. It says that that he is represented by the sun, the morning star. What is Lucifer's name?
He's the morning star. He's Lucifer, right?
The morning star.
Comes right out of what the Masons talk about it.
That is correct. It says that Allah spends his time in hell torturing Christians and Jews. Now, who is it that spends time in hell?
The devil himself.
Right.
This all comes from the Quran?
All from the Quran.
Right.
In fact, there's 1,000 repetitions of Allah torturing Christians and Jews in hell. Who is the primary enemy of God's chosen, which would be Christians and Jews? Lucifer. Lucifer, guess who Allah's principal enemies are? He defines infidels as surely they are infidels who say that Christ is the Messiah. He says that he turned Jews into apes and pigs. That he says that Jews are like donkeys. And that all Jews and Christians will arrive in hell with a confirmed reservation. And that the torments of hell have been created for his entertainment. That sound like Lucifer to you?
It certainly does. And of course, I don't think the Christian religion is exactly the opposite. You know, the Lord doesn't want anyone to perish. That's why he said the son to earth.
That is correct. The Bible is actually very informative as it relates to Islam. And the passage in Deuteronomy that Muslims claim is Moses speaking of Muhammad, actually in Deuteronomy 18:15 through 18, it's speaking of the Messiah. Moses said that a one will come from the heart of you. In other words, he'll be a Jew that will be like unto me, a prophet. And he talks about the rise of the Messiah. But then he concludes that in the last four or five verses of the 18th chapter by saying, but if a prophet comes and speaks of a God that other than me, i.e. Allah, that prophet you must kill. So the Quran speaks of it there. The Bible speaks of it there. When Isaiah is the only book in the Bible that actually gives Lucifer's name. Every place else he's either called the adversary, which is what Satan means, or he's called a serpent or this sort of thing. But in Isaiah, Isaiah actually calls him Lucifer, the morning star. And there, he says specifically, as he's leading up to the Gog-Magog War, which is an all-Islamic war against Israel. It's the final act of Islam in the world. It's 1.5 billion people die because of Islam in the tribulation. And right in the middle of the discussion of how Islam is going to attack Israel, Isaiah says that Lucifer came out of from heaven, cast down, because he wanted to be like the Most High, and it talks about him using the symbols of Islam, terror, taxation, and the prostration prayer. When John speaks of Satan, he speaks of the mark of the beast. He speaks about how he will use a dogma called submission, which is what Islam stands for, and how the mark on the forehead and on the right hand. Everything in Islam is based upon the right hand. If you're handed anything in the right hand in Islam, you live forever. If you don't, if it's left hand, you go to hell. And the Quran says that Allah will know his by the marks of the prostration on their forehead. In Corinthians, Paul tells us that Lucifer will disguise himself as an angel of light. Muhammad said it was Gabriel that came to him, and that he will have a false doctrine, and that a man who will call himself the messenger of God will use the prostration prayer and taxation and terror to deceive the Gentile world. So the Bible tells us all about Islam and what's going to happen, and the Gog-Magog war in tribulation, which kills one out of every
four people
on planet Earth, is an all-Islamic war, and it details how Islam will act and which of these Islamic countries and why they attack Israel. So none of this was lost on Yahweh, who is the name of the God of the Bible. And it should not be lost on us, because can you imagine us being ignorant, which we are as Americans? We're ignorant of a satanic doctrine that within the next 25 years is going to inspire a war that's going to kill 1.5 billion people.
And so you're feeling that this backlash of the Islamic people, this growing hatred of the West, is going to bring this conflict between the West and, of course, those of us who support Israel and the Muslim world.
Not my feeling at all. It's what the Bible says.
Right. No, I'm sure.
The end times prophecies of the Gog-Magog war are extraordinarily clear. And when you read those prophecies, Yahweh has made it absolutely obvious, particularly when you read them in the original Hebrew, that Gog is the spiritual leader of Iran. Magog is the region that is today Iran, Iraq. They lead a war immediately after the peace treaty between Israel and many nations that begins the tribulation. They do exactly what Hitler did following the gift of the high ground of Czechoslovakia to him by Neville Chamberlain. That peace treaty led to World War II. The exact same peace treaty, but this time with Israel, is going to lead to World War III, and these Islamic nations and cohorts with one another attack Israel. But this time the war uses much more powerful weapons. The Bible says that one-third of the Earth's surface will be scorched beyond repair. That means nuclear weapons. One-third of the world's oceans will be poisoned beyond use, biological weapons, and that five out of every six of the assailants, those are Muslims, that means a billion Muslims are going to die in this war, and 500 million infidels. This is a really bad thing, and the reason I wrote Prophet of Doom, pulled all the Islamic scriptures together so that Americans might understand that Islam at its core is no different than Mein Kampf. Hitler's manifesto, it was actually less violent and less racist and less warlike than is Muhammad's rant in the Quran and the Hadith, and that tolerance of a dogma that has declared war on all mankind is absolutely going to lead to what the Bible predicted 2, 3, and 4,000 years ago.
Well, now, don't you have a section there that compares the Mein Kampf with the Muslim teachings?
Right. What I did, Dr. Stan, is I broke the presentation of Mein Kampf within Prophet of Doom into four sections. I began each section immediately after an act of genocide, where Muhammad four different times perpetrated genocide on Jews. In fact, he killed a higher percentage of Jews in Arabia than Hitler did in Europe. And after each of these acts, I dedicated anywhere from 15 to 20 pages of the book to set passages from Mein Kampf directly next to the most similar passage in the Islamic Hadith and Quran. And I'm going to tell you, they are identical. Most people do not know that Mein Kampf was a religion. In fact, the word religion and the terms for religion are used more frequently in Mein Kampf than they are even in the Quran. The God is the same. In both cases, it's Lucifer.
The thing is that the entire Nazi movement was based on the occult. Now, that has been fairly well suppressed in America, although the History Channel did have a very good four-part series on that. There are a number of books out there, but this is not what's not taught in our schools today, most Americans believe that Hitler was a raving lunatic. Raving occultist.
He was
brilliant.
Brilliant.
And the thing was that there was an invisible or metaphysical force behind him. Why he was able to accomplish what he did.
It's why his two enemies were Christians and Jews, just like the Quran, because he was working for the same spirit. One of the reasons, there's two reasons that I include 70 pages in Prophet of Doom dedicated to a direct comparison between Mein Kampf and the Islamic scriptures. One is obvious, is that we in America look at Islam as a religion, therefore we tolerate it, and by showing that it's identical to Mein Kampf, which was also a religion, that we tolerate it, and that the price for tolerating it was the loss of 55 million lives. I hope to be able to instill in America the realization that today, with more people and more powerful weapons, the cost of tolerating this identical dogma will be far more severe. You know, the Bible says 1.5 billion is the consequence. And when you read these things side by side, that becomes obvious. The second reason I wanted to do it is that something that you have said that very few people recognize. Hitler was brilliant. Was he a raving lunatic in terms of his morality and the fact that he also was demon-possessed? You betcha. He was a disgusting human being, but he was a brilliant strategist. When you read Mein Kampf, the difference between Hitler and Muhammad is not only that Hitler could explain all of the reasons he did things, but Hitler was an honest psychopath. He told us exactly what he was going to do in Mein Kampf and why he was going to do it. And it's stunning that every detail, from the fact that Hitler said, I gave all my speeches at night because darkness was the best time to seduce the listener. The Quran says that the Quran must be recited at night because it has the greatest effect on the listener. Mein Kampf goes into these great tirades against the Jews and all of the ills of the Jews. Word for word, it's exactly the same in the Islamic scriptures. Mein Kampf was written to cause Germans to become mercenaries and martyrs for the purpose of world conquest, which is specifically what the Quran was created to do. And so reading Mein Kampf, as it's presented here in Prophet of Doom, is like having a conversation with Muhammad.
And,
you shoot right into his mind.
And you can really see this cult influence, this truly Luciferian influence on Adolf Hitler and certainly on Muhammad. And this is the significant thing that people are not being told today.
The reason that the Quran is so anti-Christ, you know, Muslims will say, oh, we worship all the prophets, we make no distinction between them, and that Isa, who they claim is Jesus, is an Islamic prophet. Utter nonsense. The caricature that they attribute to Isa, which, by the way, is Arabic for Esau, not for Yeshua, which was the Messiah's real name, is a completely made-up character. They deny every aspect of Christ's actual message. There's not one word of Christ's actual message in the Quran. And they deny the central element of Christ's mission, which was to sacrifice himself on the cross. The Quran said, never occurred. Did not happen. He was never crucified. Anyone who says that he was crucified is a liar and will go to hell. Anyone who says that Christ was God, was God in the flesh, that is the most unforgivable sin, and those will be the first entrance into hell.
Well, let's go to Joe, who's calling us from Chicago. Joe, thank you for calling. Do you have a question?
Well, I'm just kind of upset here. I've often heard that Islam, they celebrate the birth of Christ.
Well, is that true, Craig? Do they celebrate the birth of Christ?
There is in two surahs, the third surah and in the fifth surah, there is a significant presentation of Mary. They give Mary the wrong father, there's a game of lots that's played with Mary's future, but talk about Jesus talking in the cradle, and it's just this whole very convoluted story around the birth of Christ.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Hang on, Joe. We'll be right back in just a moment. right, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Craig Wynn, his book, Prophet of Doom. And Joe is calling from Chicago and said that he's told that in the Quran they celebrate the birth of Christ. Do they tell the story that we get it from our Bible, or is it an entirely different story, Craig?
Well, it's an entirely different story. The story that about Mary and the birth of Christ is an entirely different story as it's presented in the Quran. But Muslims don't actually celebrate the birth of Christ, nor do Christians, by the way. The date that we celebrate as Christmas is the birth of the sun god. It's the birth of the devil, if you will. Christ was actually born in the feast of the Tabernacles, which is in September, October, depending on the specific lunar month. But so we don't celebrate it as Christians. Christmas is a pagan holiday that was the birthday actually of Mithra, and Constantine caused it to be celebrated because Constantine was a worshiper of the sun god.
Well, it was a tradition, and it was done to sort of incorporate the tradition pagan holidays with the Christian holidays.
That's why we have Sunday is the day of worship, because it was established by Constantine again, because his god was the sun god, and his god was to be celebrated on the Sunday, and Constantine was an anti-Semite, and he under penalty of death, you could not worship on the Sabbath, and he created, as you know, the Universal Church, which became.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure, you can. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, Craig, you're very knowledgeable. But it just seems to me in the last 3 years, all of a sudden, Iraq and Islamic and Muslim, these people are all boogeymans, and they're all out to get us and, you know, destroy the earth and destroy the world. And then I read where the Bush families, they've owned Zapata oil refineries. And you don't think there's any oil correlation with Bush and Iraq and the reason going in there?
Well, there's a tremendous... First, I'm not a fan of the president's policy. I'm an extreme critic of the president's policy because the president's policy in Afghanistan and Iraq and his statements about Islam have made America infinitely more vulnerable as opposed to less vulnerable. And we've done those discussions on other shows, but the principal issue with Islam ought to be two things. One is we need to expose Islam based upon what it is, which is a terrorist dogma. It is a declaration of war on all humankind. And the second thing we must do is we've got to cut off the supply of money. Islam runs on oil money. Today we send $1 billion a day to the thugs that run countries like Iran and Saudi Arabia.
We're dropping B-52 bombs on Iraq, and they're the insurgents, right? We're not the insurgents. We're dropping bombs, and they're the thugs.
Well, Joe, the thing is, we don't want to argue that.
Let's speak the truth.
Joe,
you always cut me short when I start speaking the truth.
No, Joe, you interrupted when Craig was saying. I agree we should not be over there. And
neither
I'm very much against
what's
going on. So,
yeah.
But what we're talking about tonight is the fact that the Muslim faith, and I'm talking about...
It's a lie. It's an all-lie conspiracy. The real terrorists are your CIA and the FBI. Waco, Oklahoma City, Twin Towers 1, Twin Towers 2. We all know that Complex Building 7, the charges were put in there 2 weeks before it went down, and Larry Silverstein... The guy who bought it told us on PBS.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Joe?
Well, how much more are we going to slam? How much more can we dog Islam?
We have a problem,
and we
have to face that. Thank you so much.
Let me speak to two things. First, let me finish the thought on oil, because it is the only thing we can do to stop Islamic terrorism. Because Islam has never been able to create a prosperous economy in any of its countries over 1,400 years, it is 100% dependent today on that $1 billion a day that the West sends it, and they use 100% of that money to tyrannize their own people and then indoctrinate them so they terrorize us. So if we continue to send $1 billion a day to the Islamic world, we are paying for our own funeral. We are creating a living hell for those people, and we're creating terror in our own midst. And so if we wish to stop it, all we have to do is to reclaim those oil fields that were stolen from American companies. If we were to do that and make certain that none of that money goes to the warlord thugs like the Fahd family in Saudi Arabia, none of it goes to Islamic schools, Islamic mosques, or Islamic media, and instead goes to positive humanitarian things like housing and decent schools and food and this sort of thing, we would stop Islamic terrorism immediately, because tyranny is required to indoctrinate terrorists, and tyranny is very expensive. The second point is that it is true that every time we drop a bomb or we kill somebody in Iraq, we're creating exactly the same situation we created in Vietnam, where we manufactured far more communists than we killed. We're manufacturing more jihadists than we're killing in Iraq. But when you talk about the first bombing of the World Trade Center, it was done by Sheikh Ar-Rahman. Sheikh Ar-Rahman is the foremost Quranic scholar in the world. He was the senior professor at the University of Akbar in Cairo of Quranic studies. And so the number one expert on the Quran in the world was the first terrorist to blow up the World Trade Center. That ought to tell you just about all you need to know about Islam.
Well, I would like to suggest for Joe, who called in, that I had to cut him off because he wouldn't carry on a conversation. He just wanted to shout. But I share his concern about what's going on, and I think you do as well. But he does not recognize what is happening, and that we are, by our activities, fomenting a return to this radical faith, which was so disastrous for the Muslims in previous centuries, and will be disastrous for the world. My fear is what we are doing is going to precipitate this war that you are so concerned about, and that I share your concern about. And if you read the book by Samuel Huntington, The Clash of Civilizations, he talks about that if you wanted to get into a world war, what you would do would be to go into the Islamic world and try to force your ideas of democracy and Western culture on them. And then the worst thing you could do is get into a war over there. And that's exactly what we've done.
Now, previously, it wouldn't have been a big deal. The reason it's such a big deal now is because Pakistan has nuclear weapons. And because we pushed the fundamentalist Muslims out of Afghanistan into Pakistan, they will kill Musharraf. And when they kill Musharraf, they're going to have 20 fission bombs. And because the Saudis helped finance it, the Saudis have access to nuclear weapons. And because Khan, which is one of the things I predicted in Tea with Terrorists, the lead Pakistani nuclear scientist, sold the by way of bribe, the centrifuge technology to both Libya and Iran, for the purpose of refining the fuel for fission bombs. Iran is now within months of having a fission bomb, and Libya will soon have a fission bomb. And so we have now created a world where we have enraged Islam against us, while they gain fission bombs, and while we as a nation have no idea about the doctrine of Islam and why they're so motivated to kill us. And understand that this situation is so much different than it was with the Russians. MAD worked, Mutually Assured Destruction, worked with the Russians because they weren't mad. They didn't believe that that dying would take them to paradise. They wanted to live. Muslims believe that if they sail a fission bomb up the Hudson River into New York City and blow themselves up, they're going to go to paradise with the maximum number of virgins. They're going to use those bombs.
I fear that you are right. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Craig Wynn, and we'll take Jerry's call during the break. And then, if you'd like to give us a call when we get back, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and let's go to Jerry calling from Los Angeles. Jerry, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes. I have two questions. First of all, could you give me a reference in the Quran for that where Muhammad makes a pact with the devils?
Quranic surahs regarding things related to demons, you will find there's many, many of them. And when you go to the Prophet of Doom website, rather than just cite them all, when you go to the Prophet of Doom website, go to what's called Muhammad's Own Words. You'll see it on the right-hand side. When you go to Muhammad's Own Words, turn to demons. It's one of the headings under Muhammad's Own Words. And when you turn to demons, you'll have the opportunity to read of the Quranic and Hadith quotes specifically related to demons and devils.
Well, the interesting thing about the book, Jerry, is the last 200 pages is really sort of an appendix where he has everything organized according to specific things like deception. An area on deception, an area on intolerance. What would it be under demons? Or where would that be?
It starts on page 105 of the Muhammad's Own Words section. For example, it says, Quran 22:53, he may make suggestions thrown in by Satan's, the devil's proposals, but a trial and a temptation for those whose hearts is a disease. In other words, what the Quran is saying here is that the satanic verses that Muhammad had just ordered were the suggestions of Satan, but they were really thrown in there just to make the non-Muslims irritated. It says, Quran 22:52, every messenger that we have sent, every prophet before you, when they framed a desire, Satan threw some vanity into their desire. So speaking on behalf of Satan. Here's one from the Sirah. Muhammad's mother said, I am afraid that he has become ill and that something terrible is going to befall him, so I have brought him back to you. She said, what has happened? I said, I fear that a demon has possessed him.
And Jerry, all I can do is suggest you go to you can see it up there on the internet at prophetofdoom.net, and then go to page, and it's in the Roman numerals 105, and you'll find about 200 or 300 references there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so, anything else, Jerry?
Oh, yeah, actually, that was just a quick question. I was trying to get a reference.
Okay, because we've got a whole board full of
people. Okay, well, let me just ask, the only thing I've come across when I've, I debate some Muslims online, the only thing that I've ever come across that stumped me was the supposed historic validity of the Book of Barnabas, the Gospel of Barnabas.
What does the Gospel of Barnabas have to do with that?
It doesn't have anything to do with Islam,
and certainly nothing to do with Christianity.
What happens is that Muslims claim, in fact, the Quran has an account in it that comes out of what was called the Gospel of Thomas, about Christ turning a clay bird into a real bird. Because the Quran is so filled with direct plagiarism out of the Talmud, when they actually created the version of the Quran that we see now in Baghdad 100 years after Muhammad's death, they copied some of the stories out of apocryphal Christian works, in addition to scores of them out of the apocryphal Hebrew writings.
Okay, thanks so much, Jerry. Let's go to Mark, who's calling from New York. Hi, Mark.
How are you doing, Doctor?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Okay. I just wanted to refer to something mentioned earlier. I believe Craig is your guest name.
Craig Wynn, yes.
Yes. Craig, you mentioned something about, I think it's Rahman, who was
Arakwa's
hat-wearing mullah who was instrumental in the 93 bombing in the World Trade Center.
That was Omar, right.
Right. Yeah. Well, there was an FBI informant named Iman Salam who had the conversation recorded because it was distributed at one point. He was told by the FBI agent in charge, I think his name was Esterhaus or Esterhazy, to not do anything when he begged Esterhazy, who was the FBI agent in charge, to give him something to render the bomb inert. So, you know, I realize we're pointing fingers at Muslim terrorists, so to speak, but you understand there seems to be this willing and able partner on the other side of it. And I think Dr. Sin has also mentioned many times how a lot of the Middle East terrorism has been funded and fomented by us, by our government.
Well, that's true, but then it's true mainly because our State Department believes that Shin Tzu was the ultimate authority on morality. Shin Tzu wrote, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend." So America has routinely funded and aided and abetted its next enemy. We created the Saddam Hussein that we had to go attack. We created the Mujahideen that became Al Qaeda that we had to go attack. We created Stalin's ability to murder his own people and Mao's ability to murder their own people, and both of them came around to attack us, one in Korea, one in Vietnam. We have a bad habit of equipping and aiding those who will kill us. We are the principal benefactor of the terrorists and they call themselves Palestinians by funding the Palestinian Authority. So,
right. I mean, just as a follow-up, when in 1948 we were raising our hands to basically vote for the
right.
State of Israel to
right.
be formed, we were also allowing the rat lines to put people like Reinhard Gehlen and Arnold Schwarzenegger into the Middle East to start Al-Fatah. So, this is the kind of thing that it seems as though we're working at cross purposes.
We are working.
When we get caught.
One of the reasons I wrote Tea with Terrorists, Tea with Terrorists is a very different book than Prophet of Doom, same subject, but from a different perspective. It's really important for Americans, particularly conservative Americans that think, you know, that we're doing the right thing, understand how America has consistently sided with very, very bad organizations and has funded and abetted them only to pay the price later.
Absolutely. Thank
and,
you.
And actually, in Isaiah 17 and 18, which I think speak of America, it talks about this nation, which I interpret to be America, and it says that because we have separated ourselves from Yahweh, which is the name of the God of the Bible, and because we have looted Israel, that we will be pruned prior to what's called the harvest or the rapture. We are actually the only nation that has successfully looted Israel, and it's quite a story as to how we've gone about doing that. But America thinks that we're the number one supporter of Israel, when in fact we have really done Israel an enormous amount of harm.
Okay, Mark, thank you so much.
All right.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening, and let's go to Roger, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. Thank you. And Craig, hopefully you're on the same page that the State Department, for one, far from having a life of its own, I would say, except that it happens to comport with the... there's only so much bungling and ineptitude to be able to lay off to something that it is, in fact, shares a common agenda with the Illuminati's who animate the power brokers of both the Republican and Democratic establishments for however long now.
Well, now, do you have a question, Roger?
Yeah, well, I'd like to respond to that first, please.
Yeah, I prior to studying Islam, I really knew only enough about the Illuminati to be dangerous. I have spent a considerable amount of time now reading the documents that the Germans seized at the formation of the Illuminati and made public, and you can read them on the internet. The Illuminati is clearly a satanic organization. They speak openly about worshiping Lucifer, and they are all the way up through the ranks. They endorse Islam, which Islam is the purest form of Satanism on the planet today, and it. The original papers of the Illuminati, as it wrote its strategy, incorporated a final war that was an Islamic war against Israel. So there certainly seem to be a lot of parallels. The Illuminati appears to operate in America under the Council on Foreign Relations, and George Bush is a member, as is Kerry. As a matter of fact, Kerry gave a speech just recently at the Council on Foreign Relations talking about how he was going to negotiate and capitulate with the Islamic world.
No, I'd like to ask Craig, and your last name is spelled G-Y-W-N?
No, W-I-N-N.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to ask, thankfully we've been delivered from Gnostic heresies of salvation through knowledge, let's say, early in the Christian church. That having been said, wouldn't you have to say that for a person of average intelligence who's a Christian, that there can only be so much claimed excuse for ignorance and still, in fact, be a true Christian? So how can a guy like George Bush, regarded by all the major media figures, be regarded as some authentic Christian? And this is the same George Bush, quoted by Robert Morris quoting the Los Angeles Times, "We worship with you the universal God," when he was at that mosque.
Okay. Let's get Craig's remark on
his,
that.
His point is probably the most important political point that can be made. George Bush is a fraud. You cannot be a Christian and say that Allah and Yahweh are the same God. You cannot be a Christian and talk about Islam being a good and decent religion. You can't be a Christian and advocate giving the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, to Islam when Yahweh gave it to his people. Everything George Bush does as it relates to his declarations about Allah and Islam and Israel are completely counter to the message of the Bible. And so, while I'm not the judge of his spirit, that's not my job and don't want that job, I am called, as is all Christians. This caller was absolutely right. We as Christians are called to be discerning, and we are called to denounce false gods and false prophets and false deeds and false doctrines. And unfortunately, the man's words and his deeds are wholly inconsistent with someone who would be a follower of Christ.
Well, Greg, one thing I'll say is that you you don't conceal your feelings, and you're very outspoken, and you certainly can justify of what you believe. Well, we've got Ann calling in from Illinois. Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Hi there. I just had a quick question for your guest.
Now, are you listening on shortwave, or are you listening to the station there
I'm
in Chicago?
I'm listening to the station.
Okay, fine.
9:30. Quick question, if I may. Your guest, Craig Wynn, said that America has taken away from Israel, and we think we're supporting it. I just wondered what he meant by that.
Well, I'll give you lots of examples. In the Gulf War I, we gave Egypt $29.5 billion to say that they were part of the alliance. They took all of that money and turned it into weapons that they will use against Israel. As a matter of fact, the Abrams tank is no longer made in America. It is made in Egypt. We gave Syria $5 billion. 100% of that was used as weapons, which they will use to attack Israel. When the Jews successfully went up into Lebanon, and as far as they went into Lebanon, was actually part of Numbers 34, as Yahweh described the borders of the Promised Land, it was America that forced them to leave, and therefore they're being terrorized by it. When they successfully claimed all of the territory in the West Bank, and we're actually moving into to Jordan, it was America that forced Israel to come back.
No, it's
When we went in, when Israel claimed all of the Sinai in the 67 war, because Israel and Syria had attacked them simultaneously, it was America that forced Israel to give back the Sinai, and we did it for one reason. We wanted Egypt and Saudi Arabia to stop buying Russian weapons and to start buying American weapons, and we paid Egypt $2 billion into perpetuity to do that, as well as forcing Israel to give back the Sinai.
Okay, I see.
And if I could just comment in addition to that, with the Oslo Accord, we were going to force Israel to give over 95% of the land that they occupied until recently over to the Palestinians.
Yes.
And despite the fact that they were going to get just about everything they wanted, Arafat turned down the deal. But right now, we're in a position where Israel has given 90% of their land to the Palestinians. And that's what the wall going up is. If you've been to Israel, at one time they had a defensible border along the Jordan River. They do not no longer have any sort of defensible position. That's why they have to build this wall. And they are doing this because we forced them to give over 90% of the land they had to
the
Palestinians.
Correct.
Does that sound like we're really helping the Israelis?
No, it doesn't, but I'm at sea as to why we are doing these things.
You know, when this president said that in 2005 he is going to recognize a Palestinian state, he said it again this last week, it is like shooting a ballistic missile into God's eye. It is literally like spitting at God to say that I am going to force your promised land into the hands of those who follow a religion dedicated and perpetrated by the adversary, Satan. I can't imagine why America would do such things, and it makes me want to cry.
And it says in the scriptures, God said to Abraham, I'll bless those that bless you and curse those that curse you.
Yes.
We are doing everything we can to turn God against this country, because there are two forces in America. One is the Christian and the good, and the other is the Luciferian and the evil. And I fear that we have many evil people in positions of power in our courts, in our government, in our media, and that's why we're in the trouble we are today. We've got a lot of good people, but this Luciferian influence nobody wants to talk about, and yet it's very real.
And I think a lot of people are totally ignorant of it.
Well, that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, and I'm so glad you
listen. I'm glad you do, because you make me more aware.
All right.
And I thank you so much.
Good night. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Ed calling from Chicago, so we've had several callers from the Chicago area tonight. And so if you're out there and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Don't be bashful. Give us a call. We'd love to hear what your questions are. And I tell you that Craig has done a tremendous job putting this book together. It is, I believe, the definitive work on the Muslim faith. And I think what's so useful, really, to me, is this section in the back, this last 200 pages, where he'll take this idea of slavery or the idea of demon possession, and then you've got all the references to that, so you don't have to go through this the other 800 pages to pick those out. He's made it very easy for you, so you can go directly to those points. And one evening, or one time, we were doing an interview, and somebody called in and said, "Well, you just give me one reference where," and I've forgotten even what the statement
was. Terrorism.
On terrorism.
Right.
And so Craig, of course, turned to the back of the book, and he, after about 30 or 40 places where in the Quran it advocated terrorism, I interrupted and said, "I think that should answer your question." And the fellow's response, "Well, but what about the way the Jews are treating the Palestinians?" So, we've got Ray calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I just wanted to ask one thing. Is Osama bin Laden a friend of the Bushes?
No.
No.
But Osama bin Laden is a tremendous misnomer in America. We
right.
think that Al Qaeda is responsible for terrorism and our problem. And if we could just get rid of Osama
right.
bin Laden and Al Qaeda, the world would be a fine and safe place. Nothing could be further from the truth. The direct correlation to that would be, in World War II, if we could have gotten rid of all of the Divine Wind, the kamikaze suicide bombers,
right.
or all of the SS,
right.
don't you think that the religious culture of emperor worship in Japan would have made more kamikazes, and the occultist nature of Nazism would have made more SS?
Yeah, indeed they did. They went underground.
And they did. And so that's our big problem as a country, is that we go off with our righteous indignation mm-hmm. against symptoms of a disease.
Right.
There is a link between Al-Qaeda and every other Islamic terrorist organization in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The link is Islam. They're all following the same prophet. Muhammad mm-hmm. was a terrorist. He led 75 terrorist raids.
Mm-hmm.
He was a bloodthirsty pirate. And the Quran mm-hmm. orders Muslims to follow Muhammad's example.
Right.
And so all of these organizations are just fundamental Islamic organizations. And until we deal
right.
with the root cause of them murdering and mutilating and committing acts
yeah.
of suicide bombing,
yeah, right.
We as a nation are going to become more vulnerable every day.
And my fear, Ray, is that what we're doing over in Iraq today is just recruiting more people into this radical, as Craig would say, into this true form of the Muslim religion.
Right. It's a quagmire over there.
Yeah. Right. Now, understand, I'm a conservative Republican. I don't like the other guy either, and everything that he has said related to Islam has been as lost as, as George W. Bush.
Yeah.
But understand that I work for Yahweh. I take my marching orders from him. He is intolerant of false gods, false religions, and false doctrines, and I don't care who it is that is endorsing a false god, a false religion, or a false doctrine. I'm going to speak out against it.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
good.
I don't say that because I don't like his politics. I say that because I don't like his words and his deeds.
No, neither do I.
The trouble is, Ray, we don't have much of a choice, do we?
No, we don't. We have a choice between two skull and bonesers.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm tired of voting for the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, I'm not going to vote. I've just decided I am never again going to vote for president of the United States because I don't think we're ever going to run somebody that's worthy of our endorsement.
Well, we do have at least one very good man who is a personal friend of mine who's running at the Constitution Party, but we'll be talking more about that. We don't want to argue about president.
Okay.
Anything else, Ray?
Okay. That's it.
Good night. God bless you.
I'm glad there's somebody good to vote for. I stand corrected.
We can talk about that off the air. But
okay.
Michael Perutka is a man who loves God, and he certainly knows the Constitution and totally dedicated. He's very young. He's only been at this for 6 or 7 years, but he's learned an awful lot, and he's certainly doing a great job. You know, he must be a good man because he's never mentioned by ABC, CBS, or NBC.
My kind of guy.
Right. Well, we're just about going to have to wrap this up. So we've got about 3 minutes. What thought would you like to leave with our listeners this evening?
I would like the listeners to know that while I understand they have busy lives, that Americans are going to lose everything we cherish if we, as average Americans, don't come to understand Islam and then repudiate it and make our voices heard so that our politicians and the media can no longer lie to us. I'd like to read out of the Spoils of War Surah so that your listeners might know how grave this problem is. It says, Allah has sent you from your homes to fight for the cause. Allah wished to confirm the truth by his words. Wipe the infidels out to the last. The Quran defines infidels as Christians. I shall fill the hearts of the infidels with terror. So smite them on their necks in every joint and incapacitate them, for they are opposed to Allah and his apostle. Whoever opposes us should know that Allah is severe in retributions. The infidels will taste the torment of hell. That means Christians will taste the torment of hell, according to this God. So when you meet them in battle, do not retreat, for all who turn away from fighting, in other words, you cannot be a peaceful Muslim, will bring the wrath of Allah on themselves, and their abode will be hell. So fight them until all opposition ends, and Islam is the only religion. Fight them how long? Until all opposition ends, and Islam is the only religion. Islam is a declaration of war against all mankind. If Dr. Stan and I created a religion and it said these words, would you tolerate it in your midst? Would you allow us to build mosques? Or would you say, no, you cannot preach anything that calls for the murder of all of those who do not agree with you?
And yet they're working in our prisons today, they're working in our cities, and about 80% of the mosques in this nation today are staffed by Wahhabi clerics who are pushing this philosophy. Would that be a fair statement?
That is correct. If we as Americans do not recognize that Islam has no right to exist in America because it is a declaration of war against America and it incites mass murder, that if we do not repudiate it and we do not stop tolerating it, they're going to kill millions of us. That is the choice. We're going to lose our freedoms. We're going to lose our prosperity. We're going to lose our lives if we, as just average Americans, don't come to understand Islam. Go to prophetofdoom.net or buy the book from Dr. Stan. Please read it. Become active once you understand what it says. Our war is not against Muslims. It's against Islam. We need to save Muslims from Islam so that we can save ourselves from the terror Islam inspires.
Beautifully said. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, Craig. It's a long time, but it was a great program.
Dr. Stan, I love you. You are such an asset for America. God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed our interview with Craig this evening. It's difficult for anybody to talk enthusiastically for two hours, but Craig does a great job at that. And his book, Prophet of Doom, is must reading for anybody who wants to understand the radical, or as Craig would say, the normal form of Islam. He feels that this is the true Islam, which he's really right. We have an awful lot of people of Muslim faith who want to be peaceful. But if you are a true Mohammedan, if you embrace the Islamic philosophy, you embrace violence and all the things that go along with this. And the tragedy is there was no radical Islam until some 20 years ago when, as our caller from Chicago said, we began financing this whole Islamic movement. The CIA began printing copies of the Quran and distributing them and promoting this radical form of Islam and terrorism, and it looks like we've created the best enemy money could buy. But when you get the fire started in the dry forest, you never know how it's going to end. And when you rekindle the flame of ancient Mohammedan radical belief, or perhaps true belief, why you leave yourself open for terrible, terrible problems. And this is what we face today. So we have to understand what the enemy is. And yes, we have evil and wicked people in our government and in the CIA. We also have evil and wicked people on the other side. Our job is to get the truth out, to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And, of course, to begin training our people about the fundamentals of the beliefs of this country, the Christian foundation of America. And then, of course, we hope many of you out there will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. If you'd like to get a copy of Craig's book, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. The book is Prophet of Doom. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it, because it will tell you the secret that has been passed down through the ages by the sages of these secret societies. And yes, there really are secret societies out there, and they're working, some of them, at the highest levels of our government today, which is why we're having the problems we are, and why we are creating over and over again the best enemies money could buy. Again, the book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, you can get it by itself or along with a video and an audio tape. That we call it The Brotherhood of Darkness Special. If you have not yet read watched my video on the origin of wars, or if you have not seen my video, Iraq, The Untold Story, why both of those videos are excellent. I would only get one of them, however, because there is some overlap. There is a syllabus that goes with one or both of those videos. It's called Iraq, The Untold Story, and you'll actually see the documentation written by the people who created and planned the Iraqi war, and they planned it back in 1997. You'll read what they said. You'll see who they are. And, of course, many of these people are in key positions in the Bush administration today. So remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And we ask you, of course, to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, we're going to lose this country. And then we ask you to pray for our leaders, our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, when I'll be back with you once again, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.